If you weren't with us last week, we just started a new sermon series. We're looking at some of the strange stories Jesus told about being part of his group. And we called this series Playing for a Winning Team, hoping it would inspire the Bills. But that didn't work out. Leading us back to all of the jokes this week. Do you know why the Bills can't have a website this year? They will never be able to string together three W's. How many Bills does it take to change a flat tire? One, unless it's a blowout, then they all show up. Did you hear that after September they're going to change the area code in Buffalo from 716 to 044? That's kind of how kids learn to count in Buffalo. They learn to count to 10 saying 0 for 1, 0 for 2, 0 for 3, 0 for 4, 0 for 5. You get the idea. Why can't Rochester have a professional football team? Then Buffalo would want one too. Yeah, it was ugly, but we decided to continue on with our series with or without the Bills. Last week, we talked about the value of choosing a genius head coach. This week's the topic moves to uniforms and the surprising role that they play in Jesus' worldview. Here's today's odd story, chapter 22, verse 1, that Joanne just read for us. Jesus spoke to them again in parables, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a king who prepared a wedding banquet for his son." He spoke in parables. A parable is a story from real life that sneakily teaches an important point. And Jesus is talking about a royal wedding here, but it's really much bigger than that. Because this, Jesus says, this is what the kingdom of heaven is like. Verse 2, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who prepares a wedding banquet for his son. He sent his servants to those who had been invited to the banquet to tell them to come, but they refused to come. Back then, the king would send out a save-the-date notice to famous people, inviting them to his son's wedding. Like we send out wedding invitations, they would do that. But then on the day of the banquet, the king would send out another announcement saying, "It's all ready, come on in and get it." And in Jesus' story, when the announcement day of went out, everybody begged off. No one showed up for the reception. Messengers came back and told the king, they don't want to come. And the king was stunned. He was insulted that the important people that he invited to his son's wedding would not show. He thought, this really can't be happening. He figures they must have misunderstood the invitation. So verse 4 says, he sent out some more servants and said, tell those who have been invited that I prepared my dinner. My oxen and fatted cattle have been butchered and everything's ready. Come to the wedding banquet. Verse 5 says, but they paid no attention. And they went off, one to his field, another to his business. The rest seized the servants, mistreated them, and killed them. So the king sends out a second notice. And he has messengers take a menu with them so that the people will see what they're going to get, thinking once we clear up this little miscommunication, it's sure to be a great party. But no, people understood. They knew what day it was. They just had other things to do. In fact, some people were so annoyed that the king kept bothering them, they beat up the messengers. Do you know the famous line, don't shoot the messenger? Well, they didn't know that line, and they did. Verse 7 says, the king, when he heard that, was enraged. I guess. He sent his army and destroyed those murderers and burned their city. It's supposed to be such a happy occasion. But in his anger, the king orders carnage. And across the land, there are famous people dead and beautiful homes smashed, set aflame. The city is in ruins. These people who claim to be friends of the king, they're not going to be at the king's son's party because they're dead. And that, says Jesus, is what the kingdom of God is like. People you would expect to be there won't be there. But that's just the first act of this play. There are two more. Act 2, and verse 8, Jesus says, then the king said to his servants, the wedding banquet is ready, but those I invited did not deserve to come. So go to the street corners and invite to the banquet anyone you find. So the servants went out into the streets and gathered all the people they could find, the bad as well as the good, and the wedding hall was filled with guests. This was a very bad day for the rich and famous in that town who decided they didn't want to get dressed up. But it was a very good day for the homeless people who lived just outside the castle. Did you hear what Sarah Cummins did with her wedding after it got called off? She's a 25-year-old lady, lives in Indianapolis. She had paid for a $30,000 reception, non-refundable, and the guy she was supposed to marry decided he didn't want to get married. No wedding. So she decided she was going to call some local homeless shelters and ask if the people there would like to come to her wedding reception. and 170 people dined on bourbon-glazed meatballs and roasted garlic bruschetta and big wedding cake. Something like that happened in Jesus' story when the king invited whoever wanted to come in, and they did. Good people, not so good people, bad people. The wedding hall was full of people that nobody would ever, you'd never expect to see them in the castle. The king was so mad that his invited guests refused to come, he opened his gates wide. And that, says Jesus, is what God's kingdom is like. People you would never expect to get in are going to be there. But that was Act 2. There are three acts to this play. Act 3 is the weird one, if you don't think 1 and 2 is weird. Verse 11 says, "But when the king came in to see the guests, he noticed a man there who was not wearing wedding clothes. And the king asked, 'How did you get in here without wedding clothes, friend?' The man was speechless. Then the king told his attendants, 'Tie him hand and foot and throw him outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.'" He wasn't wearing the right clothes. I agree with Mark Twain, who once said, "Clothes make the man. Naked people have little or no influence in society." But what's up with his king? He is a piece of work, is he not? First, he burns a whole city to the ground because they won't come to his party. Then he invites people off the street in, and then he throws a guy out for looking like he's off the street. We think, what in the world? How did you think he'd be dressed king? He's off the street. He's doing the best he can. You can't invite people to come as you are party and then kick them out for how they are. That's craziness to us, but not to the people listening to Jesus' story, because they knew. They knew back then, when the king invites you to the castle, he always provides proper attire at the door. Like when we ask people who come to our house to take their shoes off when they come in. Nothing against their shoes, we just want to make sure our carpets stay clean. When the king would throw a party, they would invite you to put on some new clothes at the door. Nothing against your old clothes that you worked in the manure fields all day. Well, actually, yes, they did have something against those clothes. And a royal invitation would always include a new set of unequine stained clothing, because the kings don't like seeing or smelling all that stuff, you know? At the Indianapolis party that Miss Cummins threw, local businesses provided clothing for everyone who attended. Suits and dresses, other stuff, so that the guests could dress up for the event. Charlie Allen was a man who had just spent 3 months in a homeless mission. And he got a donated jacket that day. And as he proudly wore it around, he said, "I didn't have a sports coat, but I think I look pretty good in it." The reason the king kicked this undressed guest out on his fanny was because this guy decided he didn't want to wear what the king was providing. He decided he didn't want to accept the king's gracious offer that day. And if he would have looked out at the smoldering houses nearby, he probably would have realized that was a bad idea. The king said, "I invited you in. I offered you a chance to don some gay apparel, and you said no? Fine. You can certainly wear your own clothes, but you can't wear them at my party." And the king had the improperly attired guy tossed out on his ear. The end. How's that for another bizarro story from the mind of Jesus? But Jesus said, this is what the kingdom of heaven is like. So it behooves us to figure out how this is like the kingdom of heaven. What does a tale of rude rejection of a king's invitation and dress code teach us about life? The meanings of Act 1 and Act 2 are pretty much agreed upon. The king is God. The son with the wedding reception is Jesus. And the party they're throwing is the kingdom of heaven. Those refusing to come to the party, even though they'd gotten an invitation, that would be the Jewish religious leaders who said no thank you when the son showed up, who eventually killed the son, who eventually killed the son's messengers, who eventually killed the other messengers. And the natural consequences of rejecting God's plan was forfeiting God's protection. So 40 years after Jesus told this story, it came true. And the Roman army wiped the Jewish leaders out, burned their city, murdered them. But how about all those people who got to come to the party unexpectedly? How about them? Well, that would be fishermen and tax collectors and prostitutes and kids and poor people and sick people. Those are the people no one thought God even noticed. And what's more, he even let non-Jewish people come into his party. And everybody pretty much agrees that that's what Jesus' story is predicting in Act 1 and Act 2. But what about the guy at the end who got in but wasn't dressed right? Who's he? What's his point? Why did Jesus add this piece? He added Act 3 because uniforms are an important part of playing for a winning team. Now, today, mostly people think uniforms are decorative. If you talk about uniforms, most people think about sports uniforms. Some are cool-looking, some are ugly. The red, white, and blue of the Bills is kind of patriotic. The Dolphins are aqua and orange, which is kind of aquatic, I guess. The Packers are green and gold, which is kind of majestic. Silver and black for the Raiders, which is kind of scary. The Patriots uniforms are red, silver, and blue, which is kind of annoying. But uniforms can play an important role in the work of people who wear them. Firefighters wear a uniform, and it allows them to deal with extreme heat. Biohazard workers have a uniform, and it keeps them safe from what they deal with. Mailmen have a uniform. I don't know, to help the dogs spot them? I don't know. But sometimes having the correct uniform really matters. Hate to bring up a sore subject, but do you remember when Thurman couldn't find his helmet anywhere? If you're not dressed right, if you don't wear the right clothes, it can affect your game. And Jesus added this character in his story here to show us how crucial our uniform is. To be part of the kingdom of heaven, you need to be wearing the right uniform, which is, what is the uniform of those who follow Christ? What clothes should Christians wear? Well, twice in the Bible, it tells us to clothe ourselves in something. In Colossians chapter 3, Paul reminds people who are following Jesus that they should clothe themselves in a certain way. They should put on a certain uniform. They should dress up so they will be identified as part of the team. And what is it that he says that we should wrap around us as our clothing? In Colossians 3, Paul says, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. He says, bear with each other and forgive each other. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And in verse 14, he says, and over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. He says, clothe yourselves with compassion and gentleness and patience. Is that how people know you? Is that what people see from you every day? Bear with each other, he says. Forgive people who hurt you. Put on love. Jesus once said, by this will all men know that you're on my team, that you love one another. So the question is, do you love other people? No, I mean really. Do you regularly give up what you want in life for the good of others? Do you wake up every day and put on kindness? Really, at your core, are you kind? Would people close to you say that you are mostly encouraging or mostly critical? What's inside you? I was with some people from our congregation. There were about 20 of us together in a home playing cards one night. And after a while, I introduced the game called Oh Shucks. Oh Shucks, that's not what everybody calls it, but that's what I call it. Oh Shucks is a trump game where you bid on the number of tricks that you think you can win. It's a great game. It's called Oh Shucks because when some people miscalculate their hand and they get really frustrated, you know in Uno, when you only have one card, you say Uno? In Oh Shucks, you don't have to say Oh Shucks when things go badly, but it's often the safest choice. So we're playing this game, which I love to play mostly because I always win. And we're playing this game, and after three hands in a row of getting stuck by the other players because they were so badly misplaying their hands, I dramatically threw my cards on the table and I said, I cannot believe I'm playing with such idiots. And you know how in the ebb and flow of a party, sometimes it'll get real quiet all at once? Just happened to be one of those moments right then, so that everybody in the house heard me say that. And everybody turned and looked at me. And I thought to myself, note to self, do not ever use the word idiot ever again, you idiot. And right then, in the silence that followed me lashing out at the people at my table, the guy sitting to my right, the guy in our church, said, John, I think you meant to say, oh shucks. And everyone laughed, and the night went on. I later apologized to the whole room. I told them that I was mostly trying to be funny, but I was kind of frustrated. I told them that I was sorry. I wish I hadn't said that. I told them I would try really hard never to say that again to anyone. And the room graciously forgave me my most inappropriate moment. But Jesus said we should clothe ourselves with kindness. Our uniform is not silver and black. To look like a Christian, you got to wear nice and gentle and forgiving, and it's got to be for real. what you are on the inside. So you're holding a cup of coffee, and somebody bumps into you, and you spill coffee everywhere. Why did you spill the coffee? You spilled the coffee because there was coffee in your cup. If there had been tea in your cup, you would have spilled tea, right? The point is, whatever is in the cup, that's what will spill out. When someone bumps into you in life, which happens, when someone bumps into you, whatever's inside will come out. So we have to ask ourselves, what's in my cup? When life gets tough, what spills out of you? Anger, harshness, negativity, idiots? Is that the uniform you're wearing? Or are you wearing joy and gratefulness and kindness and patience? Jesus said that the world will know that you're his or not by how you treat other people. And if you say, how in the world do you expect me to be those things, Walker? I'm not like that. That's not who I am. I've grown up being like me, and I'm none of those things. Here's the really cool part of Jesus' story. Do you remember his story? The king only expects you to wear what he provides you to wear. You don't have to bring your own. You don't have to have ever worn it before. All you have to do is take it when he gives it to you and put it on, right? Everybody always looks at the Ten Commandments as, you know, commandments. But actually, they're promises from God to his people. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt honor thy father and mother. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Are those rules? Well, of course they're rules. But there's something underneath the rules. God's saying more than that when he says that to us. Kind of like the angry guy who posted this online. He said, To whoever stole my copy of Microsoft Office, I will find you. You have my word. The commandments are commandments, that's true. But also the commandments are predictions of what we will be able to do when we wear Jesus' uniform. He says, you won't steal anymore. You won't commit adultery anymore. You will honor your parents. You will be able to live with God at the center of everything you do. Thou shalt do these things. It's a promise because he'll help you be better than you are. He'll give you the power of his spirit. Clothe yourselves with compassion and kindness and humility and patience and forgiveness and love. He hands you these things as a uniform. And if you will put them on, you will become them. They will become you. You will look more and more like Jesus as you go, which leads me to the other point. The other place in Scripture where we're told to put something on, to clothe ourselves with something. You want to know what the uniform of the Christian is, what we dress up like? You want to know what we should look like from other people's point of view? Galatians 3:26 says, so in Christ Jesus, you are all children of God through faith. For all of you who are baptized into Christ have clothed yourselves with Christ. How about that? We're supposed to put on Christ. We're supposed to wrap Jesus around us. In baptism, you go into water looking like you, but you come out looking like Jesus. Not physically, obviously. First guy I ever baptized, my first baptism ever was Todd Lindstedt. He was a high school kid. After camp, he wanted to identify as one of Jesus's guys, so he asked me to baptize him. I said, well, I've never done that before, but okay, here goes. He's 6'4". Our baptistry was 6 foot. So I smashed Todd's head on the way down, which was kind of unexpected for me and undesired by him. But I put him under the water, and I lifted him out of the water, and what do you know? He still looked like Todd. He was wet. He had a bump on his head, but mostly he looked like Todd. But Colossians 3 says, in his baptism, Todd had clothed himself with Christ. He was now wearing Jesus like a uniform, and from heaven's point of view, Todd looked like Jesus. The king offered the new clothing. All the people at the banquet had to do was put it on. Folks, here's the good news for today. You don't have to figure out how to be perfect. You don't have to scrunch your face up real tight in life and say, I'm going to be nice. You just have to accept the king's offer and wrap yourself up in Jesus. And when you're in him, goodness comes. He will give you what you cannot do on your own. And if you'll let him, he will remake you into the image of the Son, who, by the way, is so good that he can change the world. Here's our last story. This will take us into the Lord's Supper today. In Yugoslavia, there was a church a state church, it was so corrupt that it had given all Christians a really bad reputation. Nobody thought anything good of Christians because of how the church in Yugoslavia looked. One day, a preacher named Jakov came to a village and met an elderly man there named Zimmerman. And the old man was really angry about the stuff that he had seen the church do over the years. He told the young preacher he was not interested in listening to anything about Christianity. He told Jakov the history of the Christians in town, how they had plundered people, how they had exploited people, how they had even killed some innocent people. The Christians in town had killed innocent people. He said, "My own nephew was killed by them," and he refused to listen to anything that the young preacher had to say. Zimmerman said, "Yeah, they wear elaborate coats and caps and crosses, implying a heavenly commission, but their evil lives I cannot ignore." Trying to help him see Jesus better, Jakov said, "Zimmerman, may I ask you a question? Suppose I were to steal your coat and put it on and break into a bank. And suppose that the police saw me running in the distance after I stole some stuff from the bank, but they couldn't catch up with me. But they had one clue, however, that made them think it was you. They recognized your coat. What would you say to them if the police came to your house and accused you of breaking into the bank?" Zimmerman said, "I would deny it." And Jakov said, "But the police would say, 'Ah, but we saw your coat. It must have been you.'" This analogy about the people who were claiming to be Christians in town really annoyed Zimmerman, and he ordered Jakov to leave his home and not come back. But Jakov continued to return periodically to see Zimmerman, to encourage him and to try to share Jesus with him. Eventually, over the years, they became good friends. And finally, one day, the old man said, "How does one become a Christian?" And Jakov asked how he helped Zimmerman surrender his life to Jesus and become part of the kingdom of heaven. And as the old man wiped tears away from his eyes, he hugged Jakov and he said, "Thank you for being in my life." And then the old man pointed to the sky and he whispered, "You wear his coat very well." Wearing Jesus' uniform is not decorative. It's formative. You want to play for a winning team? Clothe yourself with what the King offers. We have some people in our group here who wear his coat very well. We have lots of people here who are learning how to do that better and better every day. We have some people here who have never yet clothed themselves with Christ. But you're thinking about it. And if that's you today, we sure hope you would do that. Maybe today. Maybe you would clothe yourself in Christ today. We have water here. I know of a pool that's still open. I know of a lake nearby. Put him on. Wear the uniform. He offers it for free. And it'll turn you into the person that you've always wanted to be. The Lord's Supper is a reminder of what is still to come. It is a picture of what, it is a very small picture of the fact that there is going to be a party like you have never seen someday in the future when the Father, the King, offers his Son a wedding reception and we can be part of it. The Lord's Supper helps us look back at Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection and realize that in the end, he wins. And because we wear him, because we look like him, so can we. Let's sing and then eat and drink in his honor.